is Emily Wright, Tech Editor and Head of Special Projects at EG. And thank you so much for joining us on day three of the Future of UK Cities event. So please do tweet if you'd like to, hashtag EG Future Cities, to comment on this session. It's going to be a good one. And we're talking today all about data, something that we've been focusing on pre-pandemic, obviously, it being a huge, huge part of the sector. But like so many things, it's sort of been accelerated, I think, by the situation that we've all found ourselves in. And it's so important in terms of the way we live and the way we work. It's important for buildings. It's important for thriving cities. And we've got two people joining us on this podcast today who are primed to comment on this very subject. Dan Jorgman, CEO and founder of Smart Spaces, and Rupert Green, technology architect at Lendlease Digital. So over the next half an hour, we're going to be talking about everything from digital twins to data-driven cities, and we've got some questions that have come through as well, so that's brilliant. But before we get into all of that, Dan, Rupert, let's hear a little bit more about you both. Smart Spaces, technology architect at Lendlease Digital, two roles that are perfectly positioned to comment on this subject. But I think that for some of our listeners and our audience, it'd be really useful for them to understand a little bit more about what it is that you guys do. So Dan, let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Dan Drogman, the CEO of Smart Spaces. Smart Spaces is a company that I founded with my brother 10 years ago. And we started out in developing software for the hospitality industry, mainly meeting room booking systems. And that really extended out to sort of the flex space that come into the market. And over the years, whilst developing the platform, we've had a huge requirement to smart enable the spaces that we were managing. And that's borne out our latest development, which is our smart building operating system, which encompasses a digital twin and also an occupier engagement app and a sensor data platform. So lots of things that are very relevant to today's discussion.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And Rupert.
Hi there. I work for Lendlease and we specialise in urban regeneration projects. My role within Lendlease is focusing on understanding how digital technology is best deployed to create value in these projects. So that spans everything from sort of run-of-the-mill building systems like building management systems, lighting systems, access control, security, etc. But increasingly looking at how data can help us understand the operation of buildings, the public realm, and how we can use that data to improve the experience that we provide to people that live, work and play in the spaces that we create. But also crucially for us as a developer and a contractor, it's understanding how we can drive continuous improvement using data. So understand the performance gap between what we design, how it's operated, to make sure we continuously drive improvement in not only sort of operational cost, but crucially around sustainability of these buildings to make sure that, energy use is optimized and that we understand how spaces can flex, especially given how the way that we live and work is rapidly changing around us, how the places that we deliver can be adaptable over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Well, you touched on something there, Rupert, adaptable over the next 5 to 20 years. And so many discussions that we've been having around the future of London, the future of UK cities, the future of the world, really, is all about avoiding falling into the trap of doing things in the moment and making sure that it's all got that longevity built in behind it. And I think the fact that a lot of the stuff that we're talking about today around data was already happening before the pandemic is quite reassuring in that sense, because it does feel like it's an acceleration of what was already happening rather than a knee-jerk reaction to a problem. Having said that, there's no doubt that the situation that we're currently in has really shone a spotlight on data, whether that be data in buildings, you know, to show how buildings are used and how they can be used more safely, or cities to show movement. One of the things that you've both mentioned, and it's for the reason that we're so delighted we've got you both on the panel, are digital twins. Now, this is something that, again, we've been focusing on for a while, but I wonder whether there's enough understanding around that concept, exactly what it's all about and what it can mean. I know that Lendlease have been working very hard looking at digital twins, and Dan, you mentioned the same. So Dan, can we start with you? Digital twins if you were going to sort of sum it up in a very quick sentence, how would you describe a digital twin? That's putting you on the spot. And then how can they be used and employed?
No, definitely. So I see the digital twin as a replica of the building in a digital format with all the sensor data available from that building. So that could be all the building systems, whether it be access control, lighting control, HVAC, energy management, or third-party sensors. That's represented in a 3D representation of the building. And what that enables you to do is look at historical data and really learn and understand how the building behaves, but have all those components in a single place where you can create a cause and effect relationship between them. And really where that takes you is once you have all this data represented in front of you, you can then start to deploy automation and machine learning, which really makes the building self-improve and makes it run as efficient as possible. But in the first instances of a digital twin, just simply getting this data in a standardized format across a portfolio, which is accessible within a web browser. You don't need to be down in the bowels of the building in the FM room looking at a head end of a BMS. You know, you've got this data on the comfort of your sofa at home, where you can really delve into it and understand how your building's performing. So hopefully that sort of summarizes our view of a digital twin. It is really a single pane of glass where you can get every data point from your building or your portfolio represented in a model of that building. And actually quite recently, we've even started to integrate this into Matterport. So rather than using the 3D representation, which sometimes looks quite different to the final product, we're overlaying this data into a Matterport virtual tour, so actually you can see it represented in far greater detail. But there's benefits to both.
And a good reference there to being able to do it from the comfort of your own home. I mean, I think that if any timing is good for a system that you can operate from anywhere and not have to be in a particular place or as you say, right down in the bowels of the FM room, then it's now really, isn't it, when everybody is sort of very uncertain as to how mobile we all are and how easy it is to move around. So thank you very much. Rupert, your thoughts on the same question, sort of a bit of an overview as to how you guys are viewing digital twins and, you know, what the benefits are. And as I say, I know that Lendlease is really hot on digital twins and has had a lot of success with this technology.
Thank you, Emily. Yes. So Lendlease, under the Lendlease Digital Business Unit, have recently announced our digital twin platform called Podium. It encompasses our vast knowledge of building, developing, operating assets and encapsulated that into a digital twin or a digital twin platform. So I would like to just sort of build upon what Dan outlined. So absolutely, this ability to visualize real-time data with the correct geometry in place so that you can understand the data in context, and that's critical. And also, as Dan said, the ability to run simulations to analyze. So we're very much of the opinion that a digital twin isn't just seeing the data in context, it's that ability to analyze. That's the critical differentiator between a digital twin and, say, sort of a BIM model. So it's that ability to take the contextual data and then use the power of the digital twin platform to run some pretty heavyweight analysis using machine learning, et cetera, to understand not only how the building has operated, but looking forward how the building may operate in the future. And that's the critical piece there, is that ability to predict how spaces will be used based upon trend data, based upon external data. And that's a very powerful tool. But that's only part of Lendlease's vision for a digital twin. Because we, as a company, encompass the whole life cycle of a building, right from the sort of early stage development through to operation, for us it's critical to build in that feedback loop from the operation of an asset and feed that back into the design of an asset. So we're focusing very heavily on that ability to improve the design process using the data from operation and using the power of a digital twin platform to really optimize the design and delivery of those buildings in the first place. And that sort of critical link between your design, your delivery, and your operation is where we see that sweet spot. that you don't have loss of data between design and construction and operation. You run with that data, you build that single source of truth, and you start to layer on the data from the design data, you start to validate that, you start to then drive that continuous improvement and understanding where these performance gaps exist. If they exist, you understand where inefficiencies lie. So you just start to hone that whole development, construction and operation process. And that's it's a really powerful tool that we're passionate about at Endless Digital.
Thank you very much. So we've talked about digital twins, and we've talked about how they can be used and what the benefits are. Let's talk about investment, because that's something that this industry does love to think about, and that's fair, it's fair enough. It's a money making industry. Do you feel, and have you seen, that there is an increased commitment from developers and investors to invest in this technology? And actually, I know from speaking to someone else, actually from Lendlease, that the reducing cost of these technologies, such as digital twins, has really helped with that. But I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it. So Dan, let's start with you. Is there more of a commitment to investing in these sorts of technologies?
Yeah, definitely. I think with our clients, say about 3 years ago, when we first started developing this technology, they were very much interested in our app product and what that could offer the tenant. They were very focused on that. And when we showed the digital twin, they sort of struggled to understand its relevance and how it could help them. And then when we've sort of won those clients and taken them on the journey, and they've gone through the effort of getting the building ready for the connection so we can extrapolate the data into our system. And then in some cases, we've just created a demo of the digital twin just to show them what would be capable before their commitment. And then straight away, as soon as we've given that demo, they've been like, wow, this is exactly what we thought. We didn't realize this exists, basically. And so since then, especially this year, especially even before COVID, but the advent of COVID, being able to understand how those buildings are performing right now, whether it'll be how many people are in the building, whether the AHU is providing enough fresh air to the building, whether if there's not many people in the building at all, should they actually reduce the AHU capacity because there's an opportunity to save energy. All of that has been borne out by having access to our digital twin. And I think the demand just, well, even this week we've won a contract in New York to deploy our twin. And so, yeah, we feel like it's growing all the time. And definitely, I think, like Rupert said, the cost has come down, which is really helping it the technology become obtainable. And also, I think standards are emerging as well. So back in the day, lots of different BIM models in different file formats, and it was hard to actually rationalize that and get it into a standard format. And then if you're working on a portfolio, you've got lots of different formats, and now that's sort of the VHS Betamax argument, the standards around that have started to win out with open data formats that can be worked across different systems. So that's really helped bring the cost down alongside the connections to IoT and extracting the data needed to create a real digital twin. And I really like what Rupert said, where, the difference between BIM and digital twin. I would like to say that I've noticed in the industry at the moment that there's a lot of people claiming to have digital twin, but a BIM model with a document library attached to it is not the same as a BIM model where you can simulate how that building runs and performs or play back historical scenarios. So there is a true difference, and I believe, like Rupert, that a true digital twin is one where it's fully connected and live, rather than just a repository of static data.
Thank you very much. So Rupert, I think you touched on some of that in your previous answer. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to move on to ask you, actually, before we move on to some of the questions that we've had from our audience. I'm going to ask you how we look beyond this in terms of buildings and how we start thinking about cities, because it's fantastic to see all this amazing innovation that's happening in buildings, but how do we make sure that it all knits together? How do we do the same for cities? How can we get everybody on the same page, whether that's politicians, investors, citizens? How can we build people's confidence to share and use data for the greater good in cities?
That's an incredibly relevant point, and one which we try and address pretty much every day with our projects, because the projects that we deal with are city district scale. We have the likes of Elephant Park near Elephant and Castle. We have the International Quarter over on the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park, and the likes of the overstation development at Euston Station, just mentioning the projects in the UK or in London even. And because of that scale, we need to be able to communicate some pretty complex messages in a number of levels. So we need to communicate very complex technical messages so that people can understand the interfaces between our development and existing infrastructure and existing buildings. But also we need to bring our stakeholders on board. We need to bring the communities on board, because we are creating new communities, but at the same time, we're going to be impacting existing communities. So for us, it's absolutely critical that we're able to have a two-way conversation with this range of stakeholders. And we see the digital tools as one of the tools in our armory. So there's a huge amount of benefit in having face-to-face communication, which at the moment is problematic, but we hope things will change, and having the likes of consultation meetings and having that dialogue. But I think increasingly we're seeing that the questions that we're kind of asking people, does this development provide the benefit that you're looking for? It is not a black and white answer, it's a very nuanced answer. So the ability to have that very rich model that contains all of this contextual information and all of the various socioeconomic, environmental, economic impacts and benefits of these developments is critical. So a piece of work that we're doing at the moment is, we're developing tools to help with this master planning process, to help run through various options and compress the time frame that it takes to go from a blank sheet of paper through to a resolved master plan, and then move on to the development of individual buildings and plots. And it is this master planning automation tool that we're extremely excited about, that this ability to put in that contextual data and then understand how at a district scale the development that you're looking at impacts not only that district but the wider district. And I think that ability to share your model with third party models, with other people's models, with existing city data is enormously beneficial. I mean, just thinking of London and all the various 3D models that people have around London, there isn't just one, there are multiple. And I think that ability to put your ideas into the context of the city and show how the impact that you have in terms of job creation, education, housing provision, but also during the construction phase, the impact of your development. So the reality is there's a whole load of big trucks that need to come in and out of the site, and cranes and noise and vibration and all these sort of negative impacts of construction. And it's not just you doing that, it's you and the 15 other developments in the city, of a similar scale. So that ability to understand the aggregate impact of your development and then try and work to mitigate that together with others. And I think that's something that's really powerful, that we can't see ourselves as a developer and as a constructor in isolation. It's how that we can work with others using these city data models to minimize our impact. And for us, that's an enormous opportunity to do the right thing by our communities.
Thank you very much. Great answer there. And Dan, I'm going to come to you with a similar question actually around cities, but I'm conscious of time. So I'm going to put one of the questions that we've had through from one of our attendees over to you, from Aaron Forrestrel from Riderland Limited. So data and data collecting at the moment, it's the Googles and Facebooks of this world collecting data. Data about an individual is and should be private unless the person willingly decides to sell their data. COVID, if anything, has proven our cities have failed and created dormitory towns and villages outside the central hub. Whether or not you agree with all this is, feel free to comment. So data collected and in the blink of an eye establishes the movements of people in a lifetime. So how and when can we start to embrace this to develop our future cities? Thoughts on that, Dan?
Yeah, no, definitely. I've seen this as two questions, really. I think, obviously, there's the first questions around data and privacy. And on our platform, it's very much an opt-in platform. So any data we're ever going to share, so whether you're going to embrace our facial detection for gaining access to a building, that's an opt-in. Even your employer can't force you to use that on our platform. And even if you do decide to use that, it would never make it into, say, our digital twin platform data set. It's really used for authenticating for the building. So I think even the way the track and trace app's been handled, you can see that they're not asking too much personal data. And I think that's the key. It's really having like the legal frameworks and ethics in place to make sure that only the data that's necessary is shared. And I think once people have got comfortable with that, and I do believe a lot of people have got comfortable with the track and trace app, and that's really going to help us understand people's movements at this time. And then even post-COVID, could that be used to understand a way to really shape our cities, you know, to understand what sort of communication frameworks we need, and also transport into cities. I believe that now we do have these powerful data sets of understanding how people are working, can be used to model, to shape the office of the future. I think we have data sets there now. I mean, we're already working on a number of projects where we're refitting spaces in London, and actually, sad as it is, going back to the more cellular layout. And we're using sensor data to manage using that space, so we can show you if a booth has been cleaned and if you can get access to that space, and that's all displayed on our digital twin in our 3D model. Even the cleaners get a printout which shows where the what needs to be cleaned at the end of each day.
Thank you very much. Excellent answer there too. So I'm going to move through some of these questions because I want to get through as many of them as possible. So Rupert, here's a question for you. It's from Mark Biles, London Borough of Waltham Forest. COVID showed that decision making relying on ONS was too slow. What other forms of data should decision makers rely on to make fast paced decisions?
That's a thorny question there. I just think I'd like to start with the Office of National Statistics data is the kind of gold standard of data and quality data, and we shouldn't veer away from it because it's perceived to be slow. So I think, you know, it very much, you know, the ONS data and the census data, which is again always panned as being a little bit outdated, you know, is a very, very high quality data point. So the question being, you know, how do we fill in the gaps using other data sources? I mean, gosh, as Dan said, the collection of personal data is a very thorny issue again. And I think the decision-making has to be based upon very strong needs. So if we were to understand what data is needed and how that data can be collected, and you can create a kind of fairly watertight, communicable business case for collecting that data or need for collecting that data. I think we have the whole load of data sets that we have access to. So we have mobile network data, you know, understanding people's journeys around the cities to help plan things like transport networks and, you know, et cetera. That's been done already, but I think that will become increasingly useful as the patterns that we've had established over, you know, past decades are suddenly tipped on their head. We need to understand what new patterns are, and those patterns will change depending on the state of lockdown, for instance. So, you know, I would suggest mobile network data is critically important. I think, you know, along a similar vein, the likes of the GPS data that various mobile phone apps have and produce, again, is of significant use. But again, what Dan said about personal data, again, I think it's critical that whatever we do, we have to make sure that people consent to it. And, you know, mobile network data is consented through a welcome process, the same with the GPS data. But I think it may take some time for people to become comfortable with, you know, what can be perceived to be invasive levels of accuracy that you can achieve from some of these apps. But I would just, again, like to say that all of these apps and mobile network data and other sort of data sources are sort of secure by design. Yeah, so there's no way you can identify individuals. I think it's just the perception of the amount of data that is out there that we are leaving without realizing it in many cases. So I think it's a kind of an education piece for people to understand that as they go about their lives, they do create these data trails and, you know, they are able to opt out of them as well. So I think it's an enormous opportunity to use this data, but at the same time, it's a challenge to make sure that we have truly consented data, that we don't assume consent, we make sure people have active consent, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We've got a couple of minutes left. So, Dan, I'm going to come to you with a final question. It's from Ronan Jono, WeWork International Limited. That's a very full name that I have written down here for WeWork. So what are the top three technology platforms every landlord should adopt? Not to put you on the spot or anything, Dan.
No, definitely. Well, I think I'm always going to blow my own trumpet and talk about my own platform. But I think that, you know, realistically, I think it's three features, which could be a single platform or could be three different technology platforms. But I won't mention brand names, but just talk about the main core functionality. And I think really, you know, every landlord needs a customer relationship manager, like a CRM, but more probably an occupier engagement platform where they've really got a direct line of communication to and from with their client or their end user, so they can understand their concerns. And a lot of our clients have used that to get people back to office or to make sure that they're safe to come in, and or just really hear their concerns and make sure they're providing a product that's relevant and safe and accessible. So I think that the CRM definitely is very important. I think then secondly, I think it is really how that tenant actually engages the services, and I think that needs to be self-service. So contactless entry, frictionless access, and accessing that amenity should all be very easy and accessible. And so an app, for instance, is a great platform for that. And then I think lastly, I think which builds into really what we've been talking to today, which is around the smart cities and the power of data, I think a data analytics platform which can connect to IoT data. And I think it's nowhere near as complex or as expensive as people think. And, you know, we've already set up quite recently like an IoT platform where you can see the exact air quality within your space. And these use battery powered sensors that can be deployed in a matter of days. And so really, I think, yeah, lastly, it is that piece. It's that data analytics platform and IoT, but it's nowhere near as complex or as expensive as you'd think to roll out.
Well, I like that. I like that kind of finishing the final answer on it's nowhere near as complex or expensive to roll out as you might think. And I think that's a really good point at which to finish up. I'm so sorry that we haven't got longer to talk to you both. It's been fascinating, but thank you very much to Dan and to Rupert for joining me. I really hope you've enjoyed this discussion today and that you enjoy the rest of the event. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. We hope you found the content insightful and helpful. If you'd like more of the same and to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, be sure to sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.